This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. According to PEN America, in the past month, state legislatures introduced or pre-filed 71 bills limiting school curricula, bringing the past year's total to 122 bills in 33 states. 12 have already become law, and 88 are currently being decided. The bills run the gamut in subject, but a lot of the book challenges come down to sex. Like an Oklahoma bill prohibiting schools from carrying books addressing sex and gender identity. That one was introduced by State Senator Rob Standridge.
A lot of these are alternative lifestyles, but some of them are not. What I think parents are concerned about is the over-sexualization of their children. Why are they not involved in what books are shown to their children in the library?
In Texas, school districts are reviewing a list of more than 850 books from State Representative Matt Krause for material that, quote, might make students feel discomfort, guilt, anguish, or any other form of psychological distress because of their race or sex. Boxes of books in Granbury, Texas were seen carried away on hand trucks labeled Krause's List. In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis's Stop Woke Act intends to give some legal teeth to the ban passed last June on teaching so-called critical race theory and the 1619 Project.
No taxpayer dollars should be used to teach our kids to hate our country or to hate each other.
But let's pause at the word ban. The books in question have been removed. The American Library Association uses the term book challenge to more accurately reference these cases, which vary in scope. For example, a book removed from a class's required reading might still be available in the school's library, or a book allowed in one district might be absent from a neighboring one, or even from that neighborhood's public library. In fact, over 40% of these challenges occurred in public libraries in 2020. Tracking the recent wave of book challenges is Kelly Jensen, a Chicago-based editor at Book Riot who writes a weekly update on book censorship news in the U.S. She says this nascent battle over books in schools straddles the nation.
The reality is it's happening everywhere. It's happening in the Chicago suburbs. It's happening in New York State. I recently reported outside of Seattle, Tacoma, in one of the suburbs, a middle school librarian was trying to add more LGBTQ positive books into the collection, doing what a librarian does, researching these titles, making sure they have great reviews and that they would be appropriate for their community. The principal bypassed all of their policies and procedures, just quietly pulling these titles from shelves. People in that area were shocked it was happening in their backyard.
Let me unpack a couple of things here. First, what was going on in the principal's mind? Was it simply to avoid a really noisy school board meeting in the future?
There's been a number of groups in that suburban area that are working toward challenging materials, toward oversight in curriculum. And so my read was that the principal was trying to make sure that nothing like that would happen.
And parents who wouldn't object to the books, who might actually welcome the books, they don't know that that's going on.
And it's not just parents who don't know, it's the students don't know, mm-hmm. The teachers don't know. It takes somebody who is willing to blow the whistle, like this particular librarian was, to get this quiet or soft censorship even noticed.
Moms for Liberty. You've mm-hmm. drawn attention to this nonprofit group. You say it has more than 70,000 members through 165 chapters in 33 states. Mm-hmm. You also say they operate county by county rather than city or state, meaning that the action can be very quick and targeted.
Last week, Moms for Liberty created a campaign that they are calling Moms for Libraries. They have collaborated with a publisher called Brave Books, and Brave Books publishes titles that are conservative, that are quote unquote liberty focused, and that have a religious theme. They're doing two things. They're pulling books out of the library, which is giving them negative press. But if they create a campaign called Moms for Libraries and donate books back to libraries, that certainly gives them a different look in the public eye. But when you start to dig in a little bit, you realize that this particular publisher they're working with is propaganda. So they're pushing their agenda in two directions.
Of course, the word agenda gets tossed around a lot. The people who would challenge books say that it's the gay agenda or the trans agenda or the liberal agenda or the critical race theory agenda that is going to twist the tender minds of our youths. So let's talk about what books are most prone to censorship.
One of the big ones is Genderqueer by Maya Kobabi. And it's a book about a genderqueer person coming to understand their gender identity. One of the tactics being used by these groups and individuals is looking into state policies around topics like obscenity and pornography, and using that state law or statute as a proof of why these books shouldn't be in schools or libraries.
So these books, do they have to meet the standard of having no redeeming social importance, or is it just a threat? Do they actually prevail on legal grounds?
In some states, they're trying to create the legislation that would make them be removed, where in other places, who is on the board of the school or library has the power to make that decision rather than any actual prevailing legislation.
Obviously, books that address gender identity have come under the withering light of Moms for Liberty. Books like All Boys Aren't Blue, Genderqueer, and the ever popular Heather Has Two Mommies. Also books written by Black authors and featuring Black characters, from The Bluest Eye, a standalone story by Toni Morrison, To Kill a Mockingbird by the most emphatically not Black, Harper Lee.
I also want to add to this list Dear Martin by Nick Stone, that's currently coming under fire. And I bring that one up in context of To Kill a Mockingbird, because there was just a challenge, I want to say Missouri, where students were reading Dear Martin in class. There was a complaint, and the book was replaced with To Kill a Mockingbird, which is heartbreaking because Dear Martin is a contemporary story of a Black boy and his experiences with racism, whereas To Kill a Mockingbird is by a white author about racism, but in a capacity that has merit.
In a 1950s capacity, perhaps?
There you go.
Where there were many fewer people getting to speak about their own experience directly and being paid attention to? Is that what you mean?
Books like To Kill a Mockingbird are being reevaluated for whether they are the best book to address racism in the classroom. They're still available. They're still widely read. They're still recommended. But the move has been to include more books by Black authors who can share from a perspective that To Kill a Mockingbird simply can't. Schools updating their curriculum have also been used as a conservative talking point of, well, they're removing books from the classroom too. This is a willful misrepresentation of what's actually happening, and it gets that base riled up.
Could you take me through the process of challenging a book? And how long does it take for a book to be pulled from the shelf or not?
So it's going to vary. Typically, what happens is a parent or community person will file a complaint. Most libraries have a form. What book are you complaining about? Why are you complaining about it? And did you read the material in full? typically the process is there's a committee that will meet and discuss the book. They will have all read it. They will read the professional reviews, and then they'll determine whether or not it's appropriate for their community. Now, though, we're seeing more state governments stepping in, demanding schools and libraries look for these particular books in their collection. So in Texas, it's a list of 850 books seemingly slapped together from some quick research. So there's this tension now that whatever the school's policy is might not be enough to protect their expertise in doing their jobs. Instead, it's being handed over to the state.
My understanding is in some places, the policies public library systems use are vague enough to give room for an interpretation. So they can just pull things without a formal complaint because there wasn't one outlined.
The Wake County Public Library System in North Carolina pulled Genderqueer from their shelves. I looked and looked for their collection development policy. It was very vague. It didn't have a chain of command, a set of steps that happen when there's been a book complaint. There had been a series of emails about the book, and ultimately their collection development manager decided to just pull it. This is Wake County. This is the largest library system in North Carolina. So library workers within that system complained. The library board wondered what happened. At the end of the day, not only was the book put back on shelves, but the collection development policy and procedures for a book challenge were updated and made much more accessible.
How often do you think this happens where no one really knows?
It requires somebody speaking out. I had read about it in one of the North Carolina newspapers, Genderqueer being pulled. I put in a FOIA asking for emails and found my answer right in there. It was like an external group. Some of the motivation could be that the Wake County public school system had received a number of complaints from parents, and a couple of those parents filed police reports about this book. Well, that ties back into obscenity and pornography laws. You can see the line between the two thoughts. Maybe Wake County Public Libraries was trying to ward off a potential challenge in pulling the book.
Is the concern that public libraries will be tailored to middle schoolers?
Some of these challenges in public libraries in particular don't necessarily want the books pulled completely, but want them very difficult for young people to access. In Jonesboro, Craighead County, Arkansas, what they have been doing is moving these books from the children's collection to a shelf that is now next to the children's librarian desk. So a 10-year-old who wants to read this book, let's say that the book is It's Perfectly Normal. That's another one that's gotten challenges this year. It's a puberty book with illustrations appropriate for 8-year-olds and up. Say a 10-year-old wants to look at that book. They now have to walk up to the librarian desk to browse these shelves. Well, that kid has now made it clear that they're looking at materials that people in the community think aren't appropriate. It's such a huge deterrent.
These school board meetings, are the people objecting to the books mostly white? I mean, given the way critical race theory is often tied up in education censorship, what's the role of race in these disputes?
Oh, it's absolutely primarily white. Out here, I believe it was Downers Grove High School. This particular meeting also brought in the Proud Boys, who are, white supremacists. And so there's this pride that I am seeing in many of these school board meetings. It's white pride, and it's very clear this isn't about the kids.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Kelly Jensen is an editor at Book Riot and writes a weekly roundup on book censorship in the U.S. Coming up, it's all framed as a parents' rights issue, but it's not always about the children. This is On the Media.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.